Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Make the most of your me time with sensational hair products from Method. The new range of shampoos and conditioners will leave your hair looking shiny and feeling healthy. From Pure Peace, infused with peony, rose water, and quinoa protein, to Simply Nourish, crafted with coconut, rice milk, and shea butter. And Daily Zen, with calming cucumber, seaweed, and green tea. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower with Method and reconnect with the best version of yourself.
Thanks so much for joining me on today's show, where I welcome Dr. Jolie Hamilton back on the show. And Jolie is a relationship coach for couples who color outside the lines and the founder of The Year of Opening. She is a research psychologist, TEDx speaker, best-selling author, and a certified sex educator. And today, Jolie and I talk about creating a conscious, non-monogamous relationship and everything around that. Obviously, this is a huge topic. And so we zeroed in on some of the more pressing matters that you might be thinking about, whether you are currently in a non-monogamous relationship, if you're single and considering one, or if you're in a monogamous relationship and considering bringing this idea to your partner. And we kind of start with that, is how to communicate to your partner that you're interested in exploring a non-monogamous relationship with them if you're currently in a monogamous one. Then we talk about jealousy. A big part of this conversation is about jealousy. So even if you're not interested in non-monogamy, there's going to be a lot of value in today's conversation, particularly around jealousy. And Jolie gives some very interesting tips for navigating it, for where jealousy comes from. A lot of her research is in this field. I share a personal story around jealousy and some really interesting insights I've had recently with my therapist around these feelings. And I think you guys will find that valuable along with the rest of today's discussion. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this show, please subscribe, leave us those 5-star reviews on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you are listening. We appreciate that, and we appreciate you for tuning in. Enjoy today's show. Hi, Jolie. Thanks for joining me back on the show again.
Chase, thank you so much for having me back.
Today, we're going to talk about an area of work that you're heavily involved in, and I'm excited to dive into it. And that is shifting from the idea of default monogamous relationship to a consciously chosen relationship. And I thought a good place for us to start would be having you tell our listeners a little bit about the work that you do in this area and why you enjoy helping people through this process. And then we'll dive into the nitty-gritty details.
Yeah. So Chase, it is such an interesting process to me that my draw to it is because it isn't straightforward. I love helping people who are trying to figure out what the next step is for them. And that might be that they have always been monogamous. They just came across the idea of doing something different, really customizing their relationship ideas around exclusivity and exploration. Or they might have just taken the leap. They might have jumped out of that plane and been like, we're going to do this. And they're struggling to figure out, okay, cool. But now our cultural narrative doesn't fit anymore. So we don't really know what to do. I am by nature an operationalizer. I like to make things action-oriented. I like to make things as clear as possible. So through my own struggles, making that transition from monogamy to, I transitioned specifically to polyamory myself, I found out that there's a lot of ways to do it badly, and figuring out how to do it well really requires a lot of, like you said, conscious effort, intention. So I do that now in a year-long program called the Year of Opening. It's an immersive experience. We're a small community. Every group is doing the work. It's not a small thing to make a big change.
Yeah, there's so many things to talk about as it relates to this. I want to maybe start in the trenches or in the fire, in the sense of asking you just what it's like, and you can share personally or through working with your clients, actually doing this. And I know everyone's different, and I've had my own experiences on all sides of different relationship dynamics. And I guess for me, it was like the idea of it was really cool. It was very attractive, made a lot of sense. It felt like, yeah, like totally, this is what I want. This is going to work. And then the reality was like much different, mostly in something that we'll talk about around jealousy. So I'm taking us in a few different directions, but I guess, could you speak to that idea of maybe someone's listening and they're like either thinking about going this direction or they're in the middle of it and it's not what they thought it was, or maybe your own experience would be helpful.
Well, you know, I think you're onto something when you say, it's different for everyone, but I think the commonality is it is rarely what we imagine it will be. And the number one skill that someone could come in with, often people imagine that the number one skill that they could have is communication. I actually think that the number one skill you can have to do this well is a really excellent imagination combined with the capacity to regulate yourself. Right? To be able to bring yourself back into that window of tolerance, like, okay, I can handle this, even though it is not what I thought it would be. And then we do have to, of course, really deepen our skills at communication, our ability to be present with things not going the way we anticipated. But one of the things that comes up most frequently, you're naming it perfectly, it's that we hear the idea. And I myself was introduced to the idea of non-monogamy 17 years ago. I heard that some of my friends were exploring non-monogamous paths, different ones. Some of them were swinging. Some of them were venturing into polyamory. Some of them were just kind of using the term open relationship, not even sure exactly what they were doing. I didn't identify with that idea myself. I just heard about it. So it was in the water around me now. And then at some point it became, oh, you know what? I think this is for me. And that happens for a lot of my clients. They're introduced to the idea and it settles into their psyche somewhere as, ooh, that actually might hold some promise for me. And if you're the person in a relationship or single right now and thinking, yeah, it just sounds good. I mean, I can, and here, we'll use the cliche. I could have my cake and eat it too. Yes, absolutely. I like to have my cake and eat it too. And it's also going to require a lot of you. It is, in my experience, choosing a conscious relationship of any style, non-monogamous, monogamous, anywhere, but being really conscious, it is an individuation journey. It is part of you becoming more you. It is part of you doing your psychological growth work. So it's not likely to be easy and just fun. And it's definitely not going to be just about getting laid by somebody new. It's so much more complicated than that. So yeah, you're not alone. It sounds good on paper, and then we have to put it into practice. And for some people, that practice becomes such an immense growth opportunity for them that even though it is a struggle, they stick with it. And, you know, it's not a small number of people. 5% of the population is non-monogamous right now, and 20% have tried it at some point during their relationship history. That's a lot of people. So you're not alone in trying it or being curious.
I want to talk about the details of how we can do it well. Before I do that, I want to just mention, again, I'm not the expert here and I want your input, but just through my own personal experiences and anecdotal, you know, seeing friends and people try it as a tool to fix a relationship that's failing, or let's just say a relationship that's not happy, or to spark it, it seems like that's not the place we want to do it from. And yet it's probably when it's most attractive, right? It's like, I don't want to leave my partner. I really love them and we're struggling. And this, I think this might solve it. Can you speak a little bit to that mentality and someone in that position?
Yeah. So it's totally true that most of us will have some experience with somebody who tried to save a relationship by opening it up. Like, if that is a common story, but I want to just state there is, we don't hear about the happy non-monogamy, right? So the people who are like, actually, we feel really solid, we feel really secure, and we have this life that includes multiple relationships. Yeah, they're not likely to share that information, especially if they don't know for sure that you're a safe person to share that information with. So a lot of times the happy, boring non-monogamy just doesn't get any airtime. In fact, my own anchor partner, he's been open his whole life. And it's so interesting to me to think back on. I've known him that whole time. So I knew him for 20 years while he was open with someone else. And I didn't know it because we don't talk about these things, right? We talk about them when they go wrong. Now, that said, yeah, obviously, it's never ideal to try to use anything other than deepening your relational intimacy with a person to deepen your relational intimacy with a person. It just doesn't make sense. We don't have babies to save relationships. Don't buy a house to save a relationship. Don't move across the country to save a relationship. And yet we do. Let's be realistic. So I stand in this space of, well, that's not best practices. But you know what? I do a lot of stuff that isn't necessarily best practices. So then the question is, what exactly is this for? Because I actually just recorded an episode of my own podcast, Playing with Fire, on like, can non-monogamy help us stay together? And my answer is, yeah, it can. But you won't be the same together. It will be different. So if you're not okay with experiencing change, I would say absolutely not, because you're moving toward change. So you're going to transform the relational context that you're in. So yes, it could keep you together. No, it will not make things easier or simpler, and it will not relieve you from the need to have uncomfortable conversations with a current partner.
I love that. And I think that's an important primer to dive into the details of doing it successfully. So let's talk to someone out there who's listening, who's thinking about approaching their partner with this idea, or maybe they've been talking with their partner already about it, or it could be someone that's single that wants to enter their next relationship with the idea of creating their own conscious relationship. Where's a good place for them to start in their own thinking, in their own growth?
Yeah, there's so many options. So one of the ways to think about this is, how do you take in information? Because it is important to start gaining the perspective. You swim in a monogamous society. So do I. I've been happily non-monogamous for 15 years, but I still have to unpack my mono mind all the time. Like, gremlins crawl right back in that suitcase all the time. So we do need to introduce ourselves to happy, boring non-monogamy. So we can absolutely do that through social media. We can do that through reading memoirs of just people telling their story. And there are some wonderful books and podcasts out there. My own is out there. There are some multi-amories out there. There are some great options. And if you're currently partnered, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make is start transforming their grasp, their understanding, their relational paradigm. They start making that transformation without ever mentioning it to their partner because they're scared. And so what I hear is someone who says, well, so I feel like I've updated my operating system, and, you know, I read Sex at Dawn, and I did that. And now I know that this is me, but how do I share it with my partner? It's going to wreck them. And yeah, during that time you were educating yourself, you were introducing a gap. And gaps between myself and a beloved other aren't bad. But when that gap becomes too wide, so wide that now I'm frightened to share who I am with you, that actually is an indication that I waited too long. Remember that as long as you took to educate yourself, your partner deserves that time too. And then they're also on their own clock. So sometimes somebody will come to me and say, yeah, I've been thinking about this actually for years. It's been kind of on my mind for 2-3 years, sometimes decades. I'm like, okay, cool. Remember, your partner hasn't been thinking about this. They've been going along, right? Now it's a little different. So we actually have a whole conversation guide for how do I bring this up? Because one of the things you need to do is remind yourself that just because you're on board doesn't mean your partner's obligated to get on board. Neither are you obligated to maintain monogamy if that's not your way. So your relationship actually might end. I don't shy away from that reality. That's not necessarily a bad thing. If the two of you have grown in different directions and truly is incompatible, we may need a full reimagining. Now, you also mentioned the kind of person who might be currently single, but wanting to explore non-monogamy as their life path. Like, this is me. And one of the best things we can do then is really shift how we talk about our relationships and allow ourselves to own that and really make sense of it so that we can talk to new partners about it. So frequently I'll see people who aren't yet comfortable with their non-monogamy, still dating from a monogamous perspective and going to places, events, or dating apps that really rely on a monogamous perspective, and then introducing their non-monogamy after the third date or the sixth date or after they've had sex because they want to gain rapport. But what you really did was build your foundation on a fundamental misalignment. So as painful as it is to hear, yes, we do shrink our dating pool when we say, yep, I am going to be non-monogamous. My dating pool is legitimately smaller than my single friends who are monogamous. That's the reality. But in order to be in a conscious relationship, I have to treat my partners and my potential partners as fully autonomous agents. And they don't have to want to date me if I'm non-monogamous. So really, a paradigm shift really is a full psychological, we could even say a psycho-spiritual shift.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. When you work full-time, have kids, and run a podcast, it's hard to make time for a multiple-step skincare protocol. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. Let me repeat it. They make it easy. No complicated routine, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. If you're looking for skincare products that are simple and effective, for a limited time, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your first OneSkin purchase when using the code IDO when you check out at oneskin.co. I've been using OneSkin's body lotion for about a month, and I've already seen noticeable improvements with small wrinkles and textures on my skin, specifically on the back of my neck and the back of my hands, two places where I get a lot of sun. Plus, my skin looks and feels healthier all around. It's all thanks to OneSkin's revolutionary OS-01 peptide, the first ingredient proven to deactivate aging cells responsible for lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. Unlike traditional skincare products that only mask symptoms, OneSkin pioneered a new approach integrating tissue engineering and cutting-edge science to enhance skin biology for lasting resilience against aging. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using the code IDO at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with the code IDO. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support your show and tell them we sent you. Do you want to know one of my favorite meals? It's a slice of toasted bread with tomato, mozzarella, basil, olive oil, salt and pepper, and a little drizzle of balsamic glaze. Makes my heart happy. It's so simple. It's so delicious. And I love that all the ingredients get to show off their individual flavors. I used to eat it all the time as my easy go-to meal. And then all of a sudden, there was a ton of messaging out there telling me that I shouldn't eat carbs and that I shouldn't eat bread and that bread is bad. And I hate to admit it, but I cut out bread entirely for the longest time. And it wasn't until recently that I started to understand that not all bread is created equal. Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They've remade carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. I highly recommend that you give their bread a try. They're giving Relationship Advice listeners 10% off when you visit hero.co and use the code IDO at checkout. I was so excited to discover Hero Bread. It's truly amazing, and they've made a product that is tasty and soft while having 0 to 1 grams of net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and high in fiber. I'm not going to lie, their white bread is so good, and it makes the best tomato and mozzarella sandwich. Last week, Stella and I were back in Florida visiting our family, and we all walked to the lake, and the only bread we had in the house was Hero Bread. So we grabbed a slice, walked to the lake, and by the time we got there, Stella had eaten the whole piece of bread and, of course, wanted more. So the poor ducks didn't get any Hero Bread, but Stella did. Since I had cut out bread for a while, every time I ate low-quality bread, my body felt bad. It felt bloated and I didn't feel great. But with Hero Bread, I feel good after eating it, which makes my life so much easier because now I can go back to my easy grab-and-go sandwiches when I'm on the run. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code IDO at checkout. That's IDO at HERO.co.
How do you think about and work with your clients around the idea of relational skills, just whether it's monogamy or not, just skills that we need, and one's readiness for non-monogamy? I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive, but it feels like if you have trouble communicating with your monogamous boyfriend right now, and you don't understand attachment or, you know, all these kind of fundamental things that can help us relate better, it might not be the best idea to dive into non-monogamy. That's my opinion and my feeling. Where do you stand on that?
So I would say that relationship skill work often happens when we're inspired, right? We have to be inspired to do that work. So while, yeah, it sounds like monogamy would be the easiest container to learn that in, what I found is that might be true for some people. Monogamy introduces, there's a simplicity. I have this one other person who I'm doing a whole bunch of my relational skill building with, so I'll keep practicing with them. But a lot of people aren't inspired to do the deeper work because of that simplicity. They just sort of stop. In fact, so many people come to me and say, we can do this because we're great communicators. And they are. They're great at communicating at what they communicate about, but they don't even know what they don't know. So non-monogamy can be a way to, yeah, add waves to the ocean. If you're in a boat together, all of a sudden now that boat's got some waves around it. It can create a situation where some people are now inspired to dig in and do the deeper work. And that's why I feel like I'm really, really lucky. I get to see people who come into the year of opening and have thought that they were good at relationships, realize, go through the Dunning-Kruger curve of like, oh, damn, I had no idea. Oh, I did not know what I didn't know. And then come back up through that learning process and be like, okay, but I said I was committing to this. So I'm going to do the hard work of interrogating myself, my beliefs, my values, and I'm going to do the hard work of, yeah, reading about attachment theory, listening to those podcasts, and actually communicating with my partners about things that I used to think, that's like, our relationship isn't therapy. We don't need to do that. All of a sudden, there's a reason, there's a motivation. So for those people, I would say, some of them were like, yeah, they just weren't relationship people, even though they were in perfectly decent relationships before, but now they become relationship ninjas. And I love that. It's really, really exciting to see how that takes hold. The inspiration piece is key.
That makes sense. And it's almost like baptism by fire. Like if you're
It was for me.
Yeah. If you have more chances to relate in different scenarios with multiple partners simultaneously, like your shit is going to be shown to you probably more intensely and faster.
Exactly. Exactly. So imagine, so I had a client recently who he'd gone through stuff. Like his first marriage was intense and brilliant and beautiful. And he experienced a profound loss. This was not the kind of loss that happens through a divorce. It was the kind of loss no one wants to experience, the loss of a partner through death. And then entered into a non-monogamous relationship, not meaning to. He didn't know, like, oh, he didn't go seeking that out necessarily. He was just dating. And then he started doing the hard work of like, okay, if I'm doing this non-monogamy thing and I'm committing to people, like this isn't just I'm dating multiple people. That is not actually necessarily non-monogamy. You can be a perfectly monogamously oriented person who's just in your dating stage. Cool. That's fine. You do not have to claim non-monogamy. It's once you've started having those define the relationship conversations and you're saying, I am committing to you. I am building a life with you. And here's how I am. I'm doing it while also being available to build a life, build commitments, build love, build connection with other people. And when we do that, what I watched him do was realize that the simplicity of monogamy offered him one path. But yeah, just what you said, the complexity of non-monogamy meant all of a sudden his projections, boom, right in his face. His insecurities, right in his face. The work that he could do around his jealousy, it's right freaking there. And I'm not going to lie and say that, oh, well, that's just easy. No, I mean, I've been working with this person now for 18 months. And that experience was clearly transformative, but it doesn't mean it was comfortable, right? Deep psychological introspection usually isn't comfortable. But then we have on the flip side, wow, look at the exploration. You know, like when I think about traveling to other countries, I went to Costa Rica recently. Oh my God, it was so hot, Chase. It was just so hot. And I am not built for that. I am a New England girl, not built for it. Yeah, it was a challenge. It was uncomfortable. And I saw possibly the most beautiful sunset I have ever seen in my life, right? Like we get both of those things in that experience. I think that that's what non-monogamy is for a lot of people is, wow, I'm willing to stand in the fire because the flames feel kind of good.
I love the metaphor there and leads me to my next topic, and that is jealousy and talking about this comfort versus discomfort. Obviously, well, maybe it's not obvious, but to me, jealousy is just going to be one of the biggest things in this relationship container. How does someone navigate that? And how do they sit in that discomfort and then think about, okay, this is a discomfort that I can get through, or this is a discomfort that, no, this just isn't for me?
I'm glad that you're talking about it as discomfort, because jealousy at core is about this feeling, this worry or fear that our relational connection is going to be interrupted by a third, right? And for some of us, jealousy is archetypal. It's knocking us right off our feet. It's a tidal wave. Even small instances of jealousy just feel enormous on the inside. And for other people, jealousy actually feels more like, yeah, it rocks the boat. I don't like it. I don't necessarily enjoy it. And by the way, for some of us, we actually enjoy the feeling of jealousy. We may perversely enjoy it, but remember, we've got whole genres of porn based on jealousy. So some of us, I'm lucky to count myself in that, I get off on it. So jealousy is a complicated creature. And jealousy is my academic area of specialty. So when I do jealousy studies, one of the things I do is approach it with a neutrality. And when people approach jealousy with neutrality, they tend to have a better results working with it, because monogamy doesn't protect us from jealousy. If it did, we wouldn't be in a society that has so much of it. It's everywhere. It's in our songs. It's in our literature. It's in our films. It's everywhere. It's in our mythology. So jealousy's here. It's here to stay. The question is, how do I interpret it? And then what do I do with it? Because people who are non-monogamous, yeah, what they're doing differently from people who are monogamous, and this is for my actual qualitative research, they talk about jealousy, they anticipate its presence, they talk about it not just with their partners, but also with their larger community, And they talk about it with their counselors and therapists as a normal part of life, just like you'd talk about sadness, anger, grief, anxiety, anything else. My monogamous research participants often didn't even know to talk about, didn't even know how to name jealousy. In fact, a lot of them felt a lot of confusion and shame about naming it because they're like, well, if I'm jealous, what does that mean about me? What does it mean about my relationship? Does it mean that my relationship is inherently somehow broken or something's wrong? Or does it mean that I'm not valued? That difference right there, that interpretive difference is the difference between whether we see jealousy as an enemy to be cured or killed or crushed, or jealousy as an invitation to know myself better and to relate to my partner or partners in an entirely different way. Because that jealousy, that inspiration is also, it's an indicator that there could be a threat. It's also an indicator that I care about another person.
Hey, Love Tribe. I just want to ask you a few questions. I want to know why you guys are here. Are you here because you want to stop bickering with your partner? Do you want to feel truly heard? Are you looking for ways to reignite your sex life? Or do you want to feel more emotionally connected with your partner? And let's not forget about the fun. Do you long for those fun, giggly moments at the beginning of your relationship? Over the last decade of hosting this podcast with Chase, these have been our top questions. And we get it. We've been there. And that's why we created Spark My Relationship course, because we wanted to put the tools to unlocking a fulfilling relationship right in your hands. So we're offering this course, Spark My Relationship, for only $100 until April 6th. In less than 90 days, this self-paced course will help you create more passion, improve your communication, and build a stronger, more intimate connection with your partner, all while having fun doing it. We've collaborated with over 15 psychologists and therapists to bring you the strategies that marriage therapists teach their clients. This offer is only going to last until Saturday, April 6th. So head on over to our website, sparkmyrelationship.com, and use the code FLASH24 at checkout to get the course for only $100. That's nearly 60% off, and it won't last. The sale ends April 6th. That's sparkmyrelationship.com and use the code FLASH24 to get our course for only $100. Hey, Love Tribe. I have just a few questions for you. I want to know why you are here listening to the podcast. Are you here because you want to stop bickering with your partner and you want to feel truly heard? Or are you looking for ways to reignite your sex life? Or do you want to feel more emotionally connected with your partner? Or do you just long for those fun, giggly moments of connection that you used to have at the beginning of your relationship? Well, over the last decade of hosting this podcast, those were the main reasons people tuned into the show. And we get it. We've been there. So we created our course, Spark My Relationship, because we wanted to put those tools to unlocking a fulfilling relationship right in your hands. We're offering $100 off our course, Spark My Relationship, which is a self-paced course designed to help you create more passion, improve your communication, and build a stronger, more intimate connection with your partner and have an amazing time doing it. We've collaborated with over 15 therapists and psychologists to bring you the strategies that marriage therapists teach their clients. So to unlock this special offer of our course, our listeners can visit sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock to get $100 off. That's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock.
Right in there is the opportunity to actually deepen my connection.
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors.
It's so hard to approach jealousy with neutrality for me, and maybe not everyone, but yeah, and it's an area that I haven't been confronted with it in monogamous relationships. But when I had a girlfriend who was very polyamorous her whole life, and we had a wide range of relationship relating that we were monogamous and then we were open and polyamorous. And at any rate, I then got to experience real jealousy, outside of having been in a 12-year monogamous marriage, I didn't really experience it. So that's where, you know, you said like Playing with Fire, the name of your podcast, and it felt that way. And that's where I was like, I don't like this. In my first, you know, we had conversations and there was some negotiation. What I found personally is that I just kept communicating and we made new boundaries, but ultimately I wasn't really okay with any of them, and that's okay. And I kind of came to this conclusion of like, it just doesn't work for me. And it may have even been with that partner, you know, with that relationship. I also had some ideas around that. So I'm thankful for that opportunity and for having that mirror that I otherwise wouldn't have been presented with. So I'm just sharing that to add on to kind of what you've alluded to is some of these benefits. And every situation is different. You know, that was a new partner who I was getting to know and we were developing. And then I've also done it with partners that I was monogamous for much longer and then entered into that. And that felt much different. So I think that's important to acknowledge is where we're at in our life, where we're at with our partner and how that partner relates. Like if you're with a polyamorous partner who's just not that great at communicating and checking in, and of course, it's probably going to feel not great to be in a non-monogamous relationship with them.
Or a monogamous one, really.
Right.
Just think, like, we think about it, it's so obvious to me that not everybody's a good fit with every partner. And a lot of times we look at monogamy or non-monogamy and we forget, right, it's still contextual to that partnership. I have been partnered with people who, in fact, it's funny because I have one partner right now who I could absolutely choose to be monogamous with this person for the rest of my life. I know I could. It would be fine. I could do that. I would still be polyamorous. Like my internal experience would be polyamorous. I would still fall in love with people. I know I would, but I could behave monogamously. I have other partners who, no way, I could not do that. So like, let's remember that often it is about the actual partnerships that you have, what feels good to you. And, you know, when I think about approaching jealousy neutrally, and I hear how you described, you know, you were communicating with a partner, you were attempting to make some boundaries and make sure you were communicating about what you needed in order to help deal with the jealousy. That is possibly the most common, really well-meaning mistake that I hear people make. It's so well-meaning and it makes a lot of sense. And it's actually the tactic I see so many therapists take, right? We jump right into, my research revealed there's a roadmap with jealousy. Like people who deal with jealousy really well, and when I say well, I mean they learn how to sit with that discomfort and it doesn't derail their relationships. They don't go to that because that is step four. That's step four in a five-step process. That's step four. We don't want to jump in at step four, but it makes sense because usually we're looking for, okay, let me approach this with my rational brain. My prefrontal cortex is on board. Let's make a container where we can explore this and we'll be safe. But first I need to actually go back to the beginning. So I'll just give you the really quick version. Steps one, two, and three are being able to identify jealousy in my body really, really well and really early, right? I need to know what the sensations of jealousy are for me and understand that the sensations of jealousy, when I notice them early, let me work with my jealousy right away. And so I can start taking ownership of it when it's just a small worry rather than when it has brewed up into this bonfire. The next step is to name jealousy, to actually be able to name jealousy and then parse apart what feelings. Jealousy is a complex emotion made of other emotions. So we need to be able to take it apart and see, okay, is this anger flavored? Is this anxiety flavored? Is it grief flavored? Am I having like anticipatory grief? Like I keep imagining that my partner's leaving me and I'm stuck in a grief cycle that's not even happening. Do I feel shame about my jealousy? So all of this is work I can do with myself. I don't need to wait for my partner to do anything. And then step three, which is unpacking the narrative of my jealousy. Most of us miss this step because it's pretty painful to really reflect on what does this jealousy mean about me? What have I internalized about jealousy? What do I think it means? And heck, you are not alone, Chase. When you said, you know, jealousy feels like a negative emotion, it feels like something I wouldn't want to be with. Yeah, the APA's definition, the American Psychological Association's quick definition in their online dictionary is jealousy is a negative emotion, blah, 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 blah. It does not say that about sadness or anger or grief. There, an emotion isn't inherently negative. But that right there tells us that culturally, we say, we shouldn't have to feel this. This is a bad emotion. When really, jealousy is an indicator, right? I don't actually want jealousy to go away. This is a threat detection system. Sometimes your jealousy is going to be rational. And when it is, you want it to be there. But I do need to unpack, what does this mean about me? And what does it mean about my relationship? And start to be able to sit with it. And when I get to know jealousy like this, it's a little bit like turning a dragon into a, well, at the very least, a friendly dragon in a children's book. It's still going to be possibility for danger, but now I can relate to it differently. It's, if I walk through those steps and then I get to step four, where I try to navigate my needs with my partner, now I have the actual ingredients for what do I need? Do I need lots of reassurance? Do I need a really clear exit and reentry plan every time that we come and go from each other? Do I need to have clear written agreements? Do I need to understand what the boundaries are and how they're different? Like, what is it? Most of us just try to guess. We guess and we make quick agreements based on what we think will work, and then we don't revisit and tweak those. So I take a very experimental approach to this, and it takes time. You can see why. This is why the year of opening is a year. It's immersive because it takes time to unlearn the current pattern that we have for working with something like jealousy and put it in the context of, wow, this is actually a big piece of my growth as a mature adult human. And that doesn't mean that I have to be non-monogamous. But if I do that work, and non-monogamy gives me the opportunity to do that work, it is amazing what comes up and what we unearth. It can tell us a lot about what's going on in our attachment history, our trauma work that needs to be done. So it can be a flashlight into the shadows.
I love that. And it makes me think of something I recently came to understand about myself is that some of my jealousy, or, you know, and it's not an exact science, it's a social science. So I think this is, it resonated with me with my therapist, was that some of my jealousy or feelings of insecurity were actually a protection mechanism from commitment, right? And that kind of blew me away. And when I started to think about it, and then when I started to notice the pattern, and it could be so many different things for different people, but yeah, it's like that feeling, we have this name for it and we're calling it jealousy, but that's just what we decided to call it. And, but you know, for me, it would come up even in monogamous and not overbearing, but more just dealing with it on my own. I'm like, I don't like this emotion. It doesn't feel good. I would try to be curious about it. And then when this therapist said, well, it seems like that pattern is just it's a protection mechanism. It allows me to go, oh, this relationship is not safe. Therefore, you know, like pulling away, not being as committed, even though I felt committed in the actions and even just my internal commitment, but it was almost subconsciously these insecurities would come up. I would identify them and go, yeah, I'm not okay with this, that, in my own head. Again, not even bringing it to my partner, because I understood like this is about me. And it was such a cool thing that I'm still working through to be like, oh, well, it's not just about that, as often these things are. It's maybe a deeper fear of commitment. And I'm just using my jealousy, insecurities, whatever you want to call it, but that narrative to pull back, you know?
Right. Well, we could use, so I loved that you said, I'm using this call it jealousy. Yeah. When we call it jealousy in this cultural context, we are generally meaning it's jealousy. Therefore, I can point my fingers out at my partner and say, okay, it's jealousy. So you need to fix something. Something's wrong. Or I can look at the relationship and say, yeah, this relationship isn't right for me because I shouldn't be feeling jealousy. When someone names it insecurity, and I actually hear a lot of people try to reduce jealousy down to just insecurity. It's not. Insecurity is one of the many feelings that jealousy might bring up, but it is not the only thing. It will put you in a place of being less secure, right? It's if you're detecting a potential threat, yeah, a threat implies that there's a lack of security. But insecurity has a specific kind of connotation, right? There's this sense of, oh, maybe my self-esteem isn't shored up. Maybe I really don't believe in myself, or I don't believe in this particular relationship. And when someone's feeling insecure, now not pointing to their partner, but they might point toward themselves and be like, I'm not good enough, or I can't do this. I'm not cut out for this. So I'll hear a lot of people say, I could never be non-monogamous. I am a jealous person. And to that, I always say, yeah, me too. I'm a really jealous person. I've been studying jealousy academically for a very long time now. And it's not because I don't experience jealousy. It's because I do. And I know that when you're a person who experiences jealousy, trying to limit your life down to monogamy, it may work, but it is not a guarantee. Opening up could potentially provide new options. And that might not work either. What I have found does work is learning exactly what it is I need from a partnership and from different types of partnerships. An anchor partnership, I need a certain set of things. With a comet partnership that comes in and out of my life on sort of a regular but distant basis, I need a different set of things to help me manage my jealousy and the way it works for me. So it's not like jealousy needs to be something you want to deal with. But when somebody comes to me and says, you know, I have bouts of depression, I don't think I can be in a relationship. I'm like, those two things don't add up to me. Just because you experience bouts of depression where you might pull away, you might get distant, you might withdraw, you might struggle to do your daily tasks, that doesn't mean you can't be in a great relationship. But it does mean you're probably going to have to do consistent work on that in order to not have it become the centerpiece, the focal point of your relating.
I love that we touched on this because it's relevant to whatever relationship style you choose, even if you're single. And really, though, that is the beauty of relating, because we can feel not a lot of jealousy when we're by ourselves. But then when we're presented with a situation, then it's like, oh, wow. That's why I was sharing, like, with my experience dating a polyamorous partner, is like, I thought I was pretty good. And then it was like a slap in the face and all kinds of crazy, I'll call them negative feelings, you know, that came up. And I learned a lot about myself, and I'm thankful for that. So I think this is a good primer for people who are thinking about diving into a consciously non-monogamous relationship. And we could do a whole series. You have a whole podcast on this that I want you to share, but I think this is a good foundation, and I really enjoyed our discussion today, Jolie. So before we wrap up, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online, about your podcast, about your course, and then we'll say goodbye.
Yeah. So if you are listening and you are thinking maybe non-monogamy is for me, but you're not sure, or you have a partner who's not sure, but they're on the fence, I'd go to my quiz, joliequiz.com, joliquiz.com. It's a 10-question quiz based out of my research designed to help you identify, like, ooh, am I ready? Or am I actually needing a lot of foundations? And there's some spots in the middle, of course. You can also follow me on social media at Dr. Jolie, Joli underscore Hamilton, like the musical. I'm on all the socials. You can find me everywhere. And if you want the jealousy roadmap, yeah, if you go take the quiz, you'll be brought right over to the jealousy roadmap so that you've got a copy of that in hand the next time the green-eyed monster comes for you.
Amazing. Well, we will have those links in our show notes and on our website. And thank you for taking the time to come on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Chase.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into today's episode. As always, all the links to the guest, as well as any of their recommendations, will be in the show notes page. You can find the link to that in the episode description or by going to idopodcast.com. Click on the podcast tab up at the top and you will have access to all the episodes that we've ever done. There are over 300 of them. And while you're on our website, if you haven't checked out our free 14-day Happy Couple Challenge, we really hope you do. It's a free email challenge that we send to you. It's 14 days of fun, easy, doable challenges to help strengthen and improve your relationship. And if you're looking for something that provides a little more help with working on your relationship, whether it's improving intimacy or communication with your partner, or just bringing the spark back, we would love for you guys to check out our online course, Spark My Relationship. We're offering $100 off to all of our listeners if you go to sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. We've worked with over 15 psychologists and therapists to create the real life tools and strategies that they are teaching their clients. So we wanted to give them to you. It's a self-paced online course that can be done in as little as a month or up to 3 months. You can really decide how much or how little you want to do with your partner or maybe just yourself. So we hope you guys check that out. It's sparkmyrelationship.com/unlock. Have a great day.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.